It's 4 o'clock. I'd like to call the meeting to order, if I could, please. And like we did last time, at a good suggestion, why don't we have a Pledge of Allegiance to start?
Pledge of Allegiance is to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can we have a roll call, please?
Chairman Beasley?
Here.
Vice Chairman Latchford?
Here.
Commissioner Kill?
Here.
Commissioner Newell?
Here.
I messed it up again. Newell. Commissioner Salverson?
Here.
Okay, we're in attendance, have a quorum. We need to make a change today because we have our Troon representative on the phone, and he's available starting now for a fairly limited period of time. So we're going to actually jump to 4 with Troon first, and then we will roll back and do the rest of the agenda as is posted.
Thank you, Chair Beasley. Wendy, is Rob on now?
I am on.
Can you hear us, Rob?
I can. That's better. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Just one second. We're going to turn the volume up for you here. Can you try speaking again for us, Rob?
I am here. Can you hear me better?
That's better. Is that good?
Very good. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Ronnie. Okay, so item number 4 is review and discussion of financial projections for the downtown golf course options. And we do have Rob DeMore from Troon on the phone. We have a PowerPoint presentation that he was going to go through that follows up on a lot of the questions and requests for additional information from the last meeting. So, Rob, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, and Wendy's ready to work the PowerPoint for you.
Kevin and Commissioner, I thank you. Is that my cue to begin?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, and I appreciate everybody's patience and time, and good afternoon from up in the mountains of Arizona. What I've put together here is a follow-up to the presentation and the questions I thought the thoughtful questions the Budget and Finance Commission had asked and put it together. So I think you'll have it on the screen up in front of you. And Wendy, if you'll take us all to the second slide.
We're there.
So it's noted on the slide where the items for follow-up that were asked of me by the Commission. They're basically more or less these following things. Wanted to update the pro forma that outlined the question of what are our fixed costs versus what our variable costs are. The other one of the requests that was noted was adding the anticipated public play to note that on the member course included in the analysis, particularly on the 36 holes and what that would look like. There was a request for case studies of what recent renovations have looked like, and we've done a number of renovations, particularly over the last 5 years, and that's sort of notable in the industry. There's a large reinvestment strategy for a lot of these different golf projects. What I decided to do is golf and in sort of clubhouse projects. I decided to give a before and after pictorial journey on things that are in the state as of recent. I'll kind of outline verbally the cost of the renovations and the impact of those renovations and what sort of occurred from there. Additionally, the question was asked, what are the comparatives in terms of the full-time employees? And so we broke it down by department and did a comparative of the 25 Arizona facilities that were open continuously for the last year that Troon, this is on the Troon side that manages, and give you a walkthrough of comparative there. I also sent a separate memorandum, and I'll highlight that at the end, about walking path examples or golf course usage specifically for non-golf use and what we see out there. I also sent out separately a backup to the available round analysis that outlines from an industry perspective how available tee times are calculated. With that, if we go to the next slide, on the updated pro forma, distributed was the pro forma, and there are a few items of note. At the very bottom of the pro forma, you'll notice this color coding that was provided that outlines fixed versus variable costs that are outlined. Like I said, it added the addition of the anticipated public play spillover on the member course. And basically what was concluded is, while we have the food and beverage piece of it, approximately 70% of the costs are fixed today. So if you can, Wendy, if you can pull up the detail on the color spreadsheet, and blink your eyes twice if you have it up. I'm obviously kidding on blinking the eyes. I'm only on doing this via phone call.
It's up, Rob.
Okay. So what we did is went through the analysis and basically went through, so what is truly a fixed cost at the town of Ouro Valley Golf Course in particular, and what's a variable cost? And what we decided, what we determined, what the fixed costs were basically tied to the following. It's the items that are noted in blue. There are items in gray that are partially fixed and partially variable, and there are items in orange that are completely variable. The items noted in the orange that you see, that represents the cost of sales. That's the consumable cost of product served. So if we sell a shirt or if we sell a hamburger, that's the cost of generating that revenue stream. Those are the costs of consumable goods. So that is a variable cost. As we sell more product, the variable costs rise. The cost of sales rise. What's also noted, the way that we separate the financial statement, is that the operating expenses are reflective of volume in consumable expenses, whether they be paper towels or garbage bags or any of that variable piece of it that's on the operating expense side of it, that too is in orange. Those two things combined are pure variable costs. We'll also note, if you look at the gray is there are some costs that are partially fixed and some costs are partially variable. I'll get to that in a moment. What's noted in blue are the items that are fixed. So the employee-related items, the advertising and marketing, the repairs and maintenance, which includes the fertilizer applications, in addition to building maintenance and the cost to maintain the golf course, all of the leases are fixed costs. The utilities are assumed at fixed costs, are not dependent on volume, along with the insurance, the fees, the management fees, and the either the bad debt or property tax. Well, you could argue the bad debt is variable. Ordinarily, with more volume, there's a bit more bad debt, but we don't really have very much of that with the town of Ouro Valley. What was noted is what is noted is fixed costs and the partially fixed costs is all of the golf course maintenance payroll, all of the overhead, which is the G&A, the general administrative, and any of the salaried employees over at the golf facilities. What is noted as variable are all of the hourly staff members, not including golf course maintenance, and the associated costs tied to the payroll tax and employee benefits for both of those. What that ends up being at the end of the day, of our total annual costs, historically been, you know, this past year of approximately $5 million, roughly $3.5 million is fixed, and the $1.375 million, $1.4 million or so is variable. What's notable is if the food and beverage is removed out, the percentage of fixed costs rises, because that's the largest area that you sort of flex like an accordion based on volume on an ongoing basis. And that rises to approximately 80%. With that, Wendy, if we can go back to the PowerPoint, unless there's questions specifically on this for now. Okay. And if we could, I'd go to the one, the slide that says the renovation case studies. I outlined two in particular that are sort of local and most recent. That picture there is a picture of the Santa Catalina Mountains over at La Paloma. I think the next slide. So one of the ones I wanted to highlight, it's notable for a couple of reasons. It's the golf course renovation that we recently completed at the Phoenician Golf Club, which is, again, adjacent to an iconic resort that was built with 27 holes that we went through with the ownership and combined with them, decided to, that what would better serve this space was, rather than having a 27 hole, it really was better served as an 18 hole. One of the things that we look at is oftentimes there are times when there is too much golf and there's times where there's not enough golf, and what we want to do is have the right amount of golf, but there's no set specific number. What we try to do is protect revenue streams and what alternative uses for the land might be, particularly if there's an opportunity to reinvest. We sort of look at all of that. You go to the next slide from the Phoenician. What this is, you'll see a mosaic of pictures, and I'll kind of explain the general concept of what the opportunity was. It, too, was facing an aging irrigation system that was 30 years plus. And they decided to address that in a variety of ways. With the rising cost of water, they went through a turf reduction plan. We went through a turf reduction plan over at the Venetian. We modified the surface volume on the lake to mitigate evaporation rates. We reduced the holes from 27 to 18 so that the surplus real estate could be untapped for spa pools and other real estate offerings that are coming over at the Phoenician. And they went through both drainage and irrigation improvements that I'll go through next. This project, it took them out for a better part of, 9 to 10 months. I think it was a 10-month journey from start to finish in this case.
What was the cost?
What we have, you see on the next slide, there's an overview of the overall golf course renovation. That's kind of what it was like before. And so we sort of started construction. You can see the area to the right that began sort of removing some of those holes. The slide here is before the renovation, and it's funny, the pictures probably don't do it justice, but you can, if you looked at it closely and if you looked at it in person, you can see the stress on the aging irrigation system, in particularly the stress that's out there. What's created on the next slide, the post-renovation, is a uniformity in grasses, and it's a bit more lush. That lushness allows the Phoenician in particular to compete at a higher level. I always tell all different projects, there is yet to be a golf course project create sustainability through a process in which there's a discount approach. You need quality that attracts it at the right price. It's both, in this case, an amenity for golfers and non-golfers for the community, and one that attracts sort of core golfers to make it fiscally sustainable. So right now I'm on the foot of the side of a hill, the Phoenician renovation. That total renovation, the Phoenician, was I think just over $3 million or so in counting to sort of make that work. But what we've seen already is the reduction in operating costs and elevation of profitability. I'm not at full liberty to say, but it's sort of double-digit growth is sort of what we're seeing over there. And particularly once the real estate is on tap, there's enormous opportunity. On the next renovation, you should see another beautiful picture of the Catalinas at La Paloma with the sun setting, probably my favorite mountains on earth, the Catalinas. And this is a different one. When we spoke a couple of years ago, and I'm taking the liberty of sort of speaking and advocating for investment longer term in the existing clubhouse, I'm going to show you the material cause and effect, particularly over at La Paloma. It's a renovation that we completed last summer that took 6 months. I'm going to show you the before and after. So the next picture is kind of an overview of what the old space was. What's noted in brown, there were no walls. There was no addition of new space at the clubhouse here in particular. At the fitness facility, while there was, we expanded the space. This is kind of an overview of what was completed, the items that were in brown and what were addressed. On the next picture is the before and after. This is one of the opportunities that I see similar to the Town of Oro Valley Clubhouse, the community center. On the left, what that represents at La Paloma, this is, again, built right around the same time in 1884. I think La Paloma Country, formerly known as the El Conquistador Country Club, opened in the 80s, 82, I believe. On the left, at La Paloma, it opened in 84. This was the old drop-off area. As you drove in, the sense of arrival, the first thing you would see is a dumpster. What's represented on the right was taking this opportunity, and rather than making that the drop-off area, it became the entrance. The next slide, on the left, it was an old sort of card room space that existed, and what was created on the right was an entry space that modernized the space without tearing down a lot of walls or anything, and it modernized the space. On the next piece, you'll see on the left is the old bar. And one of the key overlapping fundamentals that's both at La Paloma and at the clubhouse at the community center is both of those failed in their old state to take advantage of the beautiful vistas and views in the right set. The picture on the left is sort of this warm, dark tones. It was the member area bar that was over there that sort of choked the views and choked the sunlight. On the right, again, it was modernized. Most people, what we see and what was contemplated in the previous, we discussed the food and beverage. Most people we see now, they eat and they gravitate toward the bar. It's a more cost-effective way for us to service folks, and it's what people want more effectively. Menus and offerings that are more approachable and that don't come from behind a masked wall. You know, we see a lot of open kitchens and things. What this did was this made this bar indoor, outdoor. It's on the right floor of where the golf is. It's a seamless walk in and out of the golf facility. The ending holes on the golf now extend right out from the bar area. Next picture was, again, these old boxy rooms. We have a number of these rooms at the current clubhouse at the community center on the right. This represents is opening these up so you can see the views of the Cali. Same rooms from the left to the right. We simply open up the spaces with nano walls. On the fitness facility, it used to be, I think, similar in then it's over at the community center, is we took old space that had old alternative use. In this case, it was selling fitness things, and we added all new equipment to elevate the offering. And with that, with the La Paloma renovation was again sort of publicly, I think we've noted it, almost $3.5 million that was put in the area. But what it's done is it's grown again the revenue streams and attracted more customers by nearly 20%. On the next slide, this is sort of follows up on the full-time equivalent analysis, and I'll explain this one. What it notes on the left are each of the operating departments on each of our assignments throughout Arizona for these 25 stores that we do the accounting directly for. What's noted on the right side are the number of holes. So we do a couple of projects where there is zero golf there. The one is included is a residential club that's adjacent to a golf course. You have the number of holes, which is 18, and you have the average number of full-time equivalents over the 25 facilities in Arizona. On the next column, for those golf courses that have 27, you have the average number of employees at those facilities. One thing you'll note in the 27-hole facilities, each of those for us are attached to resorts where we do not do the food and beverage. This is a measurement of the Troon employees on site. That does not mean they don't have food and beverage. It's that the resort handles that responsibility. The next column is on the 36 holes. For those projects, we have the 36 holes. The number of FTEs you can see on the bottom from 0 is 30 to 36 holes is 88.8. And then on the far right, the 45-hole facility, there's only one. There's, like I said last meeting, there's only one in the state. What this represents is the number of FTEs by department that's included in the 2020 budget. It is more or less exactly what we operated with this past year. Next slide, which you'll see, this is one of the questions that was asked was, is Saddlebrook included, and in, you know, how does the, what I heard it was, how does the market work, and what are the occupancy totals, and average rate per round, and that sort of thing. So what I thought I would do is share with everybody, this is the benchmark data that is provided to the industry by market for those that subscribe to the service. It's a blind service in which each of the participants reports blindly to an information safe house that harbors information and distributes it to those that subscribe to the service. And what it does is it outlines the Tucson market and it puts in perspective. You know, I hear oftentimes, gosh, I think a golf course can do 100,000 rounds or 80,000 rounds or whatever it is. I bet such and such golf course is doing this. What this provides us on the right is the occupancy percentage that, again, the folks that look at this the way we do with the National Golf Course Owners Association is how many potential rounds, 18-hole equivalent rounds. There are, it's still about 60,000 rounds per 18-hole golf facility in the Tucson market. This represents, what this highlights, is that for the last 12 months, the occupancy percentage at El Conquistador on the public course, that includes overseed every day. There's no adjustments in this. It's 41%. For the Tucson market, it's at, the Tucson North is at 48.5%. The Tucson market as a whole is 50.6. And what that means is the general occupancy is about 30%. On the right, you see the percentage change. That's year over year. The golf courses, the El Conquistador golf courses or Tanabora Valley golf courses have grown 21.7% in terms of volume on the public side versus what the rest of the market is. Tucson market as a whole for the last 12 months through July at 13.3. You can see the average rate per round grew 16.4%. On the public side, year over year versus the market, at 0.3%. So our average rate per round on the public side annualized $36.86. You can see the north market of 32.21. It goes as it doesn't go as far as Saddlebrook, but it goes, you know, almost to that point. And then you can see the RevPAR, which is revenue per available round. And that basically takes up the total amount of green fees divided by the total number of available rounds. You can see sort of where the market sits. We go to the next slide. This is sort of non-golf use of the golf course. I sent a separate memo that basically essentially highlights there's three primary approaches toward creating effective and safe use for non-golfers using the golf course. There's really four approaches. The first approach is you don't allow any non-golfers. I don't know that that's the right approach, particularly for the golf courses owned by the town of Oro Valley. But what we want to do is there's three overarching things we want to make sure. One is that there's an insured safety for the golfers, for non-golfers, and employees. For any implementation of a strategy that we have in which there's non-golf usage. The second thing we want to make sure we have is, if there is interaction, that it is a frictionless interaction between golfers, non-golfers, and employees. Everyone can enjoy their space. So we unfortunately, I think, had an incident last year or the year before. What you want to do is create things where golfers and non-golfers, they happily sort of live together, and the employees in the same space. And the third thing is we want to protect the golf course so the golf course isn't damaged, that creates any economic burden or revenue distribution. The last thing in the world we want are animals or people damaging greens in particular, because it costs so much and affects playability and revenue streams. So those are things we want to generally protect. With that, what we've seen is, like I said, three primary approaches, one of which outlines the designated hours. You have designated hours for non-golf usage. You provide the options. You can't have a birthday party out there, but it's available for walkers, joggers. You've got to keep your pets on a leash. You know, you can't stray off the path. Whatever those rules are, those are outlined and noted in its use of the existing golf cart path, typically during non-golf play hours, right? So you don't get mixed usage per se, but you sort of save this space either early before the golf course opens and the staff is there, or after when we sweep the golf course in order to ensure safety. I recognize that we struggle with this every day, like every golf course does in America, even during the day. But this is generally the guideline that occurs. The second approach is you can create, there's a separate path that has either protective barriers on the golf course and its surrounds, and that's done through either vegetation or it's done through fencing, and there's either curved fencing or ordinarily a row of trees, or it's just taken out of proximity of play. I think we've seen investment on this from $50,000 to $400,000, $500,000 plus to create this on an 18-hole environment. It depends on the level of path that you create and the level of barrier. You know, the pictures noted in the memorandum are the David Bell path, which is a multi-use path that surrounds the Randolph Golf Course path. I mean, I'm old enough to where I remember who David Bell was and seeing him at the old Tucson Toro games at High Corbett. He was sadly, I think if I remember right, hit by a car while riding his bike, and this path was created and named in his honor. But the key to this path, and it's over at Randolph, and it's really well done, and something similar I think could be created over that, but it's going to require investment to create the protective barriers. I think it needs probably some sort of citizen and, you know, golf, MGA, insight to put this together, the Parks and Rec group, but I think this is a possibility for sure. And the last one that we see is kind of the creator of either guided walking, golf course tours, or special events. Forbes recently highlighted one of our golf clubs in Hawaii, and I recognize that Hawaii is a bit of a unique space. What they do sunset golf tours, and what they do is they've created a revenue stream where they charge, I think, $69 a cart. It's a 90-minute tour that you can see. You don't have to have a club in your hand. You see all the spaces. You have your cocktails, and you see the ocean and the sunset, and you learn about the area. I think the sunsets are as pretty on that golf course as anywhere in the state. That may be an opportunity to listen to the rest of these. The nice thing about this is it creates sort of a community, a tradition, and it creates a guided tour to give context to what's going on there and make sure that everybody's safe. Wendy, if we could go to the next slide. I have just any questions I'm happy to answer and take from here.
Rob, thanks very much for your presentation there. If I can just work back a little bit to where you started, and that's the fixed versus variable. One of the reasons we asked for that information was, of course, we know that we're dealing with projections here as we look at the various options. And projections, of course, are just that, projections. And I noted that as we get into the 36, I'm looking at the 36-hole option just for sake of ease of discussion. And I noticed that we get into the transition period of 2021 through 2023, and the fixed cost portion go up to 80%. So what that tells me, and I need your concurrence here because I'm not familiar with the golf industry, but meaning 20% of our expenses that we operate on are variable. If our projections are not or do not come to fruition, and we have to begin looking at decreased revenue and therefore looking at our expenses, it looks to me like we've only got about 20%, which would represent about $145,000 to work with, and I'm not even sure that you could be able to reduce it that much.
Give me your thoughts on that. Mr. Chair, may I interrupt for a moment? I'm getting word from Mr. DeMora that he can't hear anything. So
it was a great question, though.
It was a great question, Vice Chair Latchford. I think, if I may, if you need to move. You need to move it. It needs to point directly at you there, and you have to get this close to it. May I ask, Rob? Can you hear it?
Rob, can you hear me? Rob. Yeah, I've been on the other end here. Rob?
He is. No, he can't hear.
I know it's early, but maybe a five-minute recess is in order, just until we're able to get the audio taken care of.
Can you hear anybody, Rob, at all? All right, why don't we take a recess for a few minutes until we get him back online. Thank you.
Okay, so then it looks like it's about another...
Rob, can you hear now?
Hello? Can you hear us?
Down my throat. I'm talking all that.
Hello? Are you there, Rob?
I'm here. I'm here. Much better.
Oh, good. Okay.
Okay, we will restart the meeting again now. Go ahead, John.
Talk louder, Mr. Chair. He's not going to be able to hear you. Okay.
Rob, we're going to start asking you some questions again, okay?
Okay.
All right, Rob, John Latchford here, and thank you for your presentation. Are you hearing me okay?
I am, thank you.
All right. I've been where you sat, and it's not pretty, so I understand what you're going through. In your presentation, you talked about fixed versus variable expenses. And I noticed that in the pro forma that you gave me, which, of course, are projections looking out at the 36-hole option, and I'm taking the 36-hole option just because it's simple to speak to, in the years of 2021 through 2023, the fixed expenses go up to 80%, and I suspect that's because we delete out the restaurant operations. And we were then left variable expenses of 20%. And, of course, we're dealing with projections here. And as we look forward, if the revenue doesn't come in as projected, you take a look at what your expenses are capable of being reduced, and it looks like what you're telling us is that really the reality is that the expenses could be theoretically reduced by 20%, which represents about $145,000 worth of expenses. And I'm not sure you can even do that. But give me some thoughts about that, and let's hear what you have to say about using expense reduction in the future.
Yeah, so it's a good question. And to answer your first observation, yes, that is correct. The variable expenses noted in this, the reason they rise to nearly 80% is tied to the food and beverage piece of it. So this is an industry that is reliant on a revenue stream. The upside of that is when the revenue streams are above target, they flow to the bottom line. The difference, you know, you can certainly in any business eat into some, or if not all, a piece of the fixed cost, but there's a material effect on the product or on the operation. Is there room further in the fixed expenses? You can see what I noted on the FTEs, particularly in the golf course maintenance. We have a lot to do with the number of people that we have already. If the revenue streams weren't there, we would certainly consolidate some of the overhead positions. But you're right, it's not, there aren't hundreds of thousands of dollars to squeeze out of this to make it work. Not without cause and effect on the revenue stream.
On the La Paloma and the other, the Phoenician, who is managing the food and beverage?
So at La Paloma, it's done by the resort, which officially is HEI, but it's done by the resort team. And at the Phoenician, it's the same thing through the Starwood folks. That's how those contracts are organized. The reason for that is the commissaries for the large kitchens that support both of those resorts are located at the resort, not at the clubhouses. Those are ancillary buildings in the overall offerings.
Rob, you had about a $3 to $3.5 million cost for these renovations. So I have a kind of a two-part question. The first is, as I recall, our irrigation was going to be for an 18-hole would be 1.8 for a is that about right, Mary? A 36-hole would be a little over $3 million. So if these are 18 holes, and I cut. And I take out $1.8 million. It looks like an additional $1 to $1.5 million for the renovation. Does that sound right?
If I'm following you correctly, so on the golf on La Paloma, just for clarity, mm-hmm. there was no golf course renovation done.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
On the Phoenician, it was only golf course that was sort of noted on there.
Okay, and it included irrigation.
Yeah, there was irrigation modifications. They did not take out the underground and replace the irrigation system in its entirety. Mm-hmm. They modified the water source and how the approach was at the Phoenician.
Okay.
The idea is that the water delivery was still the key component, which is our overarching concern.
I'm sorry, say that last part again. The water.
And that's our overarching concern.
Right.
Is the now I'll also say, and we've discussed this in our office, and Chairman Beasley asked, I thought, a pretty salient question. So how do you get this money back, and what's represented in $3 million? And that's a lot of breaks to come back and sort of fix. We certainly can continue to fix and have fixed and continue to fix forward on an ongoing, on a fix, break, fix. I never can get the syntax correct. Basis forward. We just suggest it's with risk, and we sort of leak money, if you will, figuratively and literally with that. But that's what's out there. I probably didn't answer any of your questions.
Good information.
I apologize.
Go ahead.
Rob, following up on Kathy's question, you mentioned that in those two renovations, they spent $3 million and $3.5 million, respectively. And I didn't quite hear, did you say what the impact on revenue and bottom line was from doing that renovation for those
two? Both privately held, so I'm not at liberty to lay that out. Both show double-digit increases on both.
Did you say 20%, you said?
Yeah, we're nearly 20%, particularly on the top side, on each of those projects.
Did the increase come in terms of increased rounds played, or did they decide to charge more?
A bit of both.
Well, okay, because when I look at your benchmark chart,
yeah,
and we're at 36.86, and the average in Tucson is 39.59, you know, there's not a whole, that's like about 10%. So you'd have to really increase rounds in order to make this work.
And that's on the public side. Yep, on rounds and more per round, particularly in the peak season, is the key to this. Volume in the shoulder periods and a little bit of volume, but also sort of price from our visitors out of town in the peak season.
Rob, it looks as though on the 2020 budget, looking at golf, that essentially the town is subsidizing each round of golf to the tune of about $33 a round. And I don't see that changing much going forward because the number of rounds being played is not changing significantly. And the revenues that are moving are not moving substantially either. What's the story here?
Remember, the couple of things that aid going forward, you know, on this. There is, you know, one of the things that's noted on the expense side is that the operating leases for the golf course and maintenance equipment is retired in 2021, in September of 2021. Actually, I guess it started at September of 2020. We had to buy an entirely new golf course maintenance fleet, when the town of Oro Valley purchased this from HSL. And that's unusual. So that's reduced by approximately, I think, is $175,000 to $200,000, $180,000 on an annualized basis, combined with the growth that we've seen on the public side in the membership commitment. We've been unable to fully raise the dues or the volume given the uncertainty in the past. Both of these things are what's projected sort of going forward. And that does not include the HOA contribution.
But you're not increasing the number of members and you're not increasing the number of rounds played.
But I didn't want to be accused of being myopic in the approach and what's out there. So I wanted to show that in either...
Rob? Okay, we're going to postpone this meeting until we get him back. Thanks. We're going to reconvene the meeting. Rob is no longer available to us. So I think what we will have to do is create questions. That will be delivered by email. And at our next meeting, I guess we will get a response to those questions. Mary, what do you think is the best way to get you those questions?
Mr. Beasley, I would recommend that you ask them this evening, and we'll document them. And if there are questions that Tom Mead can answer on behalf of Troon, he's the general manager of the facility, then he can step up to the ones that he feels comfortable answering, and those that he is not doesn't have the answers to, we'll collect that information, and through Mr. Arts, we'll get those responses back to you.
Okay. Let's continue as if Rob was here. We'll ask these questions, and I assume since this is being recorded, we can get that done. Okay.
Yes. Let's have Wendy put up. Can you, Wendy, put up the FTE equivalence analysis chart, this one? So my question is, questions, plural, I'm trying to look at that chart and pull out what I think is non-relevant. And so I just want a validation of what is relevant would be agronomy, which I think is mowing the lawns and stuff. Is that, yes? Okay. GNA, so building maintenance, I don't really know why that's in there. Food and beverage we're pulling out. Fitness and rec we're pulling out. G&A I think is in there, but then what doesn't make sense to me with regard to G&A and agronomy is for the 36 hole, it's for agronomy is 31.1 and a 45 hole is 20 people. Like that, something doesn't make sense. In addition to G&A, there's 5.8 people under 36 holes and 3.2 under 45. Something doesn't make sense to me there. And then golf underneath GNA would be included. I'm assuming that's just the employees running the golf course. Landscaping, to me, should be included in agronomy, but maybe they do different things. Membership, you're going to have probably two people there. And I think that's all. So that's part one of the question. Part two is if you add up all those numbers and you get to a bottom line total and you compare that to his cash flow statement, there's... Payroll, employee benefits, and employee related. I think that's all the Troon employee cost. How many people is in that number? And does that kind of make sense with the chart when you pull out what's not golf related? So that's my question. You can paraphrase it, Mary.
Yeah, I guess basically we need to have that chart explained to us. We need to understand the differences between the 18 holes primarily and the 36 holes and where we are at today. And translate that into the dollars that are sitting in the spreadsheet.
Good afternoon. I was not anticipating this.
You're not sweating yet.
So to speak of the FTEs, we'll start there. Basically, what that shows is that we're running pretty much lean compared to most of all the other properties in the state of Arizona. When you look at we having El Conquistador having 45 holes of golf and 20 full-time agronomy people.
So that's us. That is us.
That is the El Conquistador. So the, in the yellow column there, I didn't realize I was this tall. That is the El Conquistador.
Okay.
Those are all of us. 52.2 is the full-time equivalence that we have there currently.
Okay.
So the, and the others are the state averages for the various properties. So that, that kind of explains the 20 FTEs that we get by with a very lean crew that does a very good job, and the rest of the state's running a little heavier.
So if we were to close the push... Close the push, so go to the from 45 to 36, can would any of these heads be reduced?
We would, I'm sure we would take a look at that. I wouldn't be able to give you a number right now as far as what that would be. We basically run push with the same crew, and we designate people on a daily basis based on what it is we need to accomplish. Obviously, through the summer months when push is basically closed, We have everybody over working on projects, et cetera. This year, unfortunately, we didn't do any monsoon cleanup. And that was unfortunate, but we would probably take a look at that.
Okay, so the 52.2, bottom right number, does that relate to this? I don't know if you're familiar with this.
I have looked at it.
Okay, so in the cash flow statement, under operating expenses, there's payroll, benefits, and employee-related. And I think that's all true. Is that so? If I added all those three numbers, that would relate to the 52.2 heads.
That's correct. The 52.2 is a full-time equivalent, meaning 40-hour equivalents for the staff. We actually employ 68 people over at the El Conquistador. So, you know, two of them working 20 hours is one full-time equivalent.
Right.
So, yes, that payroll number is the entire top line. It's all, it's everyone who works over there combined, and then it's the benefits, et cetera, below that.
So, okay, so it looks like it's pretty lean already in terms of expenses then, I would say, right?
It is one of the variables, as Rob mentioned earlier, but for the most part, yeah, we're all multitask.
Okay, thank you.
It's my understanding that the target that the council has asked for as far as town subsidy for 36 holes is $750,000 a year. Can you get there?
The target, my understanding also, is $750,000 for the tax. That's something that we're taking a look at right now. The town's working on that with Rob. And we're working on how. What is the path to that right now? I don't have another answer other than that.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to let you know that if the commission would like to see the motion, we have it for a slide. If you wanted to go through, but. We don't have a report on it yet, as Mr. Mead mentioned. We're still in the evaluation process.
Okay. Okay. On the cash flow statement related to 36 holes, we have two lines that I need simply clarification on. One reads, public sales on private side of course, and this is additional revenues. And the other is city sales tax on golf operations. For the 36 holes, that totals to $225,000 a year. And on the 18-hole forecast, it all disappears but $25,000. Could you explain this to us, please?
Yes, Commissioner Beasley. The amounts that you're referring to on the bottom The public sales on the private side of the course was actually in the motion from council that we add that additional revenue that Rob had talked about last meeting, that if we opened up the private side to some additional public play, that he estimated at the time between $150,000 to $200,000 of additional revenue. So what we did is we showed $100,000 of additional revenue in the current fiscal year and then upped that until we got to $175,000 of additional revenue by 2023.
So that is additional public play on the designated private side of the golf.
Correct.
Okay.
And then also in the motion from council, they directed us to include city sales tax that we get on the golf operations. So we went back and looked, and the city collects approximately $50,000 of sales tax on the golf operations. And so we are showing that in the cash flow statement as a reduction of the subsidy for each of the years. Then when you go to the 18 holes, we eliminated the public sales on the private course because now you only have the 18 holes, so that additional revenue would go away. And then we decreased the sales tax in half down to the $25,000, assuming we wouldn't have as much sales tax from the number of rounds played, from the restaurant operations, and so forth. There would be a reduction of sales tax revenue by only having 18 holes instead of 36.
So the assumption is that the revenues would be cut in half for 18 holes.
That is the assumption that we made for that sales tax number, yes.
Did you assume that $50,000 was a reduction of sales tax if we close all 36 holes? Is that correct?
What the number represents on the cash flow statement is that we collect currently approximately $50,000 of sales tax, and we're showing that as a reduction of the subsidy on the 36 holes.
Because you're getting the $50,000 in sales tax, which is revenue to the town.
Correct. And so if the golf went away completely, we would lose that $50,000 of sales tax revenue to the
town. Are you assuming that if the 36 holes went away completely, that those holes would not be, people would not be playing at any other course in Oro Valley?
Yes, Commissioner Kill, we did assume that all of that revenue would go away because there are no other public courses that would
be. So you assume that those people who we would have played at El Conquistador would not go to any other course in Oro Valley?
Correct.
Is that a valid assumption?
That is the assumption that we made.
Is that a valid assumption? That they would not, none of those holes would be played anywhere else in Oro Valley?
Not at a public course that we would be able to collect the sales tax on.
So you only collect sales tax on a public course. On a private course such as the Oro Valley Country Club, you do not collect sales tax there?
Commissioner Keel, I would have to go back and verify that, how the private courses are, if there are sales.
If you could let me know, please.
Yes.
Yeah. The Views Golf Course also takes public play. The Views Golf Course takes public play up in Rancho Vistoso. How do you get the utilities costs down to $1 million when historically they've been around $1.2 million, unless we've got a good monsoon season, and there's no CIP worked into this forecast for upgrading the irrigation systems?
Chairman Beasley, I think I can address that one for you. So in the 2021 column, the utilities does go down to $1 million, but that is with the reduction of the push nine holes. So there's no longer utilities for that. So that's why you're seeing a reduction there from the 45 holes, which is through the 2020 budget, and then in 21, 22, and 23, we're not including any of those costs for PUSH.
Okay. So PUSH is roughly $200,000 of water expense.
That's about right, yes. We're decreasing the utility budget from $1.18 million down to a little over $1 million, so it's about $170,000 decrease in that utility budget. And again, those are projections that are 3 years out, so we need to use abundance of caution when we're talking about projections of revenues and expenditures when we're looking that far out.
And we have cleansed the utility for the community center?
I'm not sure that I understand your question.
As I understood before, the utilities, we couldn't separate very easily the community center away from the golf operation. Has anything been done differently on that?
I'll answer that question, Mr. Chairman. No, we haven't delved in any deeper because we don't have a way of getting additional information on what portion of the electricity, for example, is paid for the pumps for the irrigation versus for the building itself. And you know, as we mentioned previously, the reason why we didn't break it out from Troon, from the Troon contract, is that it was simply a, then we didn't do any allocation of the fitness membership and that sort of thing. You know, we could make an assumption just off the cuff and say, you know, instead of the $170,000 in electric, which I think off the top of my head, we could say, let's just assume that 125 belongs to the community center and we take it out of the cost. We can certainly do that, and we can do a swag on it. The issue is that the cost doesn't go away. We still have to pay it. So whether Troon's writing the check for the bill and we're paying it, or whether it comes out of the community center side, it is 6-1, half dozen another. But it is something that we can consider in terms of, and then we'd have to look at, well, then what would an appropriate allocation of revenue be for the fitness memberships that come with a golf membership that we don't do a transfer over to the community center side of the budget out of there. We don't take any of that revenue away and move it to the other side of the equation. And so this was just a way of kind of balancing things more than anything else, without a significant amount of staff work that in the grand scheme of things isn't going to pay off very much.
But to repeat, it was estimated that $175,000 a year of the utilities were caused by something else in the community center, and that it was part of the transfer payments. That was the number that was given to us before from Stacy.
Then I'm sure that she had it had a pulse on it.
Okay.
I note that there's really no change in total rounds played and number of golf members. And Rob at least partially addressed that question. But since this is very revenue sensitive, with this high level of fixed costs that we've determined, what would it really take to increase the number of members and increase the number of rounds to get us much closer to capacity?
Well, I would think, Mr. Chair, you know, part of that is surety, and part of that is also the case that, you know, what we're seeing here is numbers under really a no-growth situation, right? I mean, they're not giving us estimates saying that they're going to sell 20% more members and therefore magically we'd be able to hit the budget numbers. This is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you're projecting on the sheets that you've given us, Tom, that membership is going to stay static at 242, and that's because you decided to give us
achievable conservative projections. Is that correct?
Well, Rob put the projections together, right. And you know, as he was saying just before he got cut off, which I don't have the benefit thereof, that he didn't want to basically inflate the increase. As one of the things that I think has been our biggest trouble since day one has been the headwinds, the uncertainty, and we feel that when we decide where we're going to end up being, there's going to be an opportunity certainly to grow the membership. Our members are very supportive with that. We have referral programs, et cetera, so there's a lot of opportunities for us to do that there. But we certainly didn't want to go in there with a really high projection. We want to be able to show some growth moving forward. We know that we've done a lot of growth in the daily fee arena, and we're building that into the member preferred tea time course moving forward. So, but there is definitely room for growth in the membership number.
Can we look? I guess request a look at that, like some different scenarios of revenue increase. And I feel like if there's any revenue increase from either increased membership, increased numbers of rounds played, increased cost per round. I know that's a complicated formula based on time of year, but maybe if there were a couple different scenarios, I feel that the revenue increase goes directly to the bottom line because you are so fixed cost heavy that that would, to me, be a valuable thing to look at in terms of, is there anything that's, you know, are there a couple of realistic options? And then, you know, how close, again, does that get you to closing the gap?
Well, certainly, as you said, the top line revenue with the fixed cost does filter down mm-hmm. very much so to the bottom line. Certainly I could get with Rob and Town Manager Jacobs, and we could take a look at some other projections with some different numbers in there. That certainly we can do that. Again, we just wanted to come in with, we've been remaining flat for a few years, right. So we wanted to kind of project that through that way.
Right, so maybe that would be the base case, and then here are a couple of other scenarios of things that could happen if indeed you were going forward with that scenario.
We can certainly do that.
Okay. Because the uncertainty would be eliminated if you're going out into 22 and 23.
Let me just ask you, Tom, a question about golf. And is it easier to get a day player than a member?
Well, I certainly don't know that where I'd go with that. I mean, certainly we do a lot of people that just come up and play daily fee golf, but our membership has been committed to us, and they bring a lot of people with them. We've shown that they also bring daily play with them as well as the rounds that they play.
Because the request that's been made to you in regards to the pro forma, the projection is to increase daily play by 175,000. Did I hear that number? And 175,000 would represent, based on your average rate, of about it comes down to about 14 people additionally daily that are coming in from daily play. Does that seem unreasonable or attainable?
I would have to check those numbers. I'm not 100% sure. We certainly do everything we can to continue to promote daily play, and I think the fact that we are going to be opening up the inventory on the member preferred course, that's going to certainly benefit us. It's going to open up some tee times and continue to drive the top line.
So how will the members react to that? It's a rhetorical question. I don't expect you to have an answer, but the members have been static, and they're projected to go static, but as Rob's indicated a number of times, they are guaranteed income. And so now the members all of a sudden are going to be faced with, bringing it down to daily terms, 14 additional people running around playing golf on their course. Have concerns in that area, or do you think that's something that can be...
Well, I certainly can't literally speak for the membership, but they've been very supportive of all of the initiatives that we're taking to take a look at all the different options, and the fact that the way it would be set would be there would be a different window of time in order to book the member preferred tee times. So they would basically still have an opportunity to to get tee times when they're looking to do so.
Because if, once you start putting 14 in additionally every day, you then open up the door. Because the anticipation is that that's going to grow over a long period of time. So from a golf perspective, you've got 14 more coming in every day, daily play, that's good. That's additional revenue. Would you continue to build upon that? And I mean, it's probably more of a business strategy question than a finance question, but it seems like if you get this opportunity, and that's what we're really looking for, is where's the additional revenue that can come in and get us that 20% after spending millions of dollars. So I'm just wondering if within the golf industry that's accomplishable.
It'd be very difficult for me to say.
I'll ask Rob the next time I see him.
What assumptions are you using as far as increase per round, increased cost per round from 2020 to 2023? Is there an increase
in the cost per round? Or you mean the daily rate, the increase
daily rate,
in the rate?
Green fees per 18 holes.
I would have to take a look at the numbers that are up there. We have been growing the rates. We have the rate structure for the next upcoming year has an increase in the rate structure. The product has been improved year over year, and we feel that we will be able to capture the increased rate that we are building into the next upcoming season here, starting, I mean, basically all the way through from October to the end of May, the rates have been built up a little bit. So we have every reason to believe we will continue to bring in the golfers.
It looks like the total rounds played are staying fairly consistent. I was mentioned earlier, but the average annual member contribution is going up 10% from 2020 to 2023. So is that due to increase in cost per round, or what's the reason for the increase by 10%?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Kill, the projection includes a 5% increase in the member fees or the membership as of January 1 of 2020, and then we included in the projection another 5% increase in 2023 after what was the assumption, the underlying assumption that was developed when we put this together in May, which was that both courses then would be completed with their investment, and that would be the time then to increase the membership rates again. And I'll just restate also what I think Rob and Mr. Art said, which is this is, you know, the abundance of caution, I think, is the conservative projections is what we are. You know, that's what we do in our revenue projections. We want to make sure that this is not overly optimistic. That happened at the beginning of the process, and I want to make sure that what we present is attainable. Could we put together an optimistic projection? Sure, we could put together an optimistic projection that would show, you know, the possibility on an optimistic, and I think Commissioner Silverson, we'd be happy to work on that type of a projection. I think that's appropriate for us to do for the 18-hole scenario as well.
Yeah, it looks like there's a 10% increase going in between 2020 and 2021. It's going from 3.3 to 3.6 million for average annual member contribution. So is that supposed to be 5%?
Yeah, there's a 10% increase in member dues from the adopted budget of 2020 to 2021.
I'll have to go back and take a look at our cells just to make sure that we get you the right answer.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Let me ask a question here. Tom, are all memberships created equal? Do they all cost the same, or are there different things that you're selling, maybe some things that used to be cheaper that you no longer sell?
That is correct. There are different memberships. We don't have, we've eliminated a few memberships that were maybe less expensive. We have a family membership, which is obviously more than a single membership. So I hope that answered the question.
Okay.
Not to put words in your mouth, Kathy, but I think what we were asking for is basically a sensitivity analysis. What would it take to increase the revenues via more members, more golf play, and what does that generate to the bottom line? Because everything is fixed cost pretty much laid in here, so any additional revenues that can be generated will just go straight through to be profitability.
Yeah, it seems to me like even putting in the budget, I'm now learning how all of this works compared to the private world. Budgeting typically, it sounds like, is much more conservative, right? And so that's, I'm thinking, okay, so if we say it's not a budget, it's just a forecast, it's a what if, it's looking at, you know, impacts of different things that might happen, different sets of assumptions, just to see, could we get there? Is it within the realm of being reasonable if we say, well, we're going to increase, you know, once we do all these things, it's going to increase 5% a year, 10% a year, whatever, you know, seems to make sense, bouncing it off of Troon, of course, can we get there, right?
And what would it take to get there?
And when you say there, you're referring to the $750,000, or you have another?
I think you've got the $750,000, and then you've got a couple of other
stretch
contributors.
Goals.
Well, sure. Just contributors to that, right? And so there's got to be maybe a couple different ways that you could make all the numbers add so that with the $750,000, along with homeowner contribution, along with the sales tax, along with different revenue, potential revenue changes, maybe that we would get there or could get there.
Okay.
And in addition, I think you'd have to then commit to making those increases in revenue, right? Meaning we know we have to increase the rates, or we know we have to get additional players in order for those numbers to be sustainably high enough to make it all tie.
Well, I think that's right now what Town Manager Jacobs and Rob are working towards for the October 2nd, I believe, to have a presentation of, you know, how do we get there.
Are there any other questions for Troon? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, is it your intention to go to continue on agenda item 4 or to return to the orders of the day?
I think since we're on 4, we may as well finish.
Okay.
4. So one of the issues, or one of the bullet points here, is the discussion of homeowner associations adjacent to the golf course. Where do we stand on that?
Yes, Chairperson Beasley, I did provide a memo in the packet that had each of the items that was requested for staff to follow up, staff or Troon. And so I just wanted to, go through the items that Troon hasn't addressed yet. The first one being item number 4. One of the commissioners asked if Saddlebrook figures were included in the North Tucson numbers. Rob did touch on that, and those are not included in the numbers that were provided.
Okay.
Number 6, a breakdown of the FTE comparisons and then run profit and loss with percentages. So staff did prepare the cash flow, and it does have percentages on there. So I don't know if there's any questions on that, but that information was provided on the cash flow for the 36 with the percentages for each of the different line items.
I have any other questions having to do with the FTEs?
Okay. The next item was number 8, private roads that were converted to town streets. There was one case that staff was aware of. It was in the Verde Catalina 1 and 2, where one private street was converted to a public street and accepted by the town. That process did take approximately 10 years to complete, to go through that process. So it was an extensive process.
Yes.
Item number 9 is a commissioner inquired about how many HOAs are adjacent to the golf course. Staff did prepare attachment D, which has a listing of all of the homeowners association, and then behind that is a map, or 4 different maps, that show the different homeowners associations and the golf course incorporated in there. So I don't know if there's any questions.
The question I have is, which HOA, or are all of the HOAs involved in that one proposal to create a subsidy for the golf course?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, the proposal that was forwarded by the Kenyatta Hills Homeowners Association is the master association for, and I don't know how many of them, but basically the area north of Lambert that covers the bulk of the holes on both sides of La Kenyatta. So their interaction with other HOAs is I can't speak to, but it's the master HOA that has made that proposal.
Okay. So everything north of Lambert, so it doesn't include those 5 holes then that are going
through
the subdivision south.
That's correct. The villages of La Kenyatta are covered by a separate homeowners association. They've been at the table. They've been in. They have made a presentation and in a previous presentation expressed, a willingness. But they have to go through a different process because of where their dues are. So no specific proposal has been made by that HOA.
Following up there, Mary, I think at our last meeting we passed a motion to ask that the council designate someone to talk with the HOAs and begin that conversation. And reviewing the video of the last town council meeting, it wasn't clear to me that they had done that. I don't want to, refer something back to them if you're taking care of that due to your other acknowledgement. Do we need, in your opinion, is that communication with the HOAs happening, or do we need to re-ask council to get that started?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Newell, what the council has asked me to do is evaluate the list of potential, basically a set of bumpers. Can we do it within these bumpers? And so that's what we're doing. While the council didn't specifically direct me, if that's something that I feel I need to provide them with information on, then that's my obligation as the town manager to do that.
Okay, so we don't need to repass a motion asking them to please designate someone to talk to the HOAs.
I would suggest not.
Okay.
Okay, the next item from staff was item number 13. One of the commissioners requested an analysis of the 27-hole option. Since we did receive direction from council to move forward with the 36-hole option analysis, we haven't done any work on the 27 at this time. We're working on what council directed us to come back with on the 36-hole option.
And actually, if I may follow up on what Mr. Art said, the council actually voted to only consider at this juncture the 18-hole option and the 36. So the 27 is no longer... the no golf option and the 27-hole option are no longer on the table at all.
And then item number 15, the commissioner requested the 36-hole pro formas be updated to include the additional revenue stream. That's what we went over previously, showing the additional $175,000 of revenue. One of the commissioners also asked to see the 2020 budget column. Again, on the attachment C that we just went over, that did have the 2020 column on there now. So that is the additional items that the commission requested staff to bring back. So if there's any questions on any of those items, we'd be happy to answer those.
One other quick question on the HOAs. Are all of these streets that are part of these HOAs, are they all private streets? Or are there any public streets that people might have access to the court?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the information right in front of me, but the vast majority of the streets within the subdivisions are private.
What does that one sentence mean when it says update to include additional revenue stream from change in policy to allow public sales on private side of course? What public sales are you referring to?
Commissioner Kill, that was what Rob described last time on allowing public onto the private side of the course with the 3 days notice that he anticipated that we'd be able to generate an additional $150,000 to $200,000 of revenue from that.
Okay.
Anybody have any other questions having to do with this memorandum? No. Thank you. Okay. This bullet point on options for the potential excess capacity of the dedicated sales tax funds.
Yes, Chairperson Beasley. There was also a request for a future agenda item from one of the commissioners to discuss options for the potential excess capacity of the dedicated sales tax funds. At this point, we would recommend that we wait until we get complete direction from council to know what that additional capacity. We feel it's premature right now to try to make a decision on what we could do because we don't know what that excess capacity is at this time. So once we get some direction on which option we're going to select, have a year or two of actual results, then we can come back to the commission at some point in the future and say, okay, we believe we have X amount of dollars of excess capacity. But to try to discuss that now, we don't believe that that would be really appropriate because we don't know what that dollar amount is at this point.
But is there an allocation restriction having to do with those sales taxes?
I'm sorry, an allocation restriction?
What can it be used for? Whatever the amount is, what can it be used for?
On the dedicated sales tax, on the half-cent sales tax, there is a dedication that it must be used for right now that the town council previously adopted. And I believe Mary read that specific dedication at the last meeting.
Strictly the parks and rec activity
yes.
At this point.
Could it be used for capital or not?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Salverson, the way that the language reads, and I'm remembering it from memory, but it's somewhere, it's specifically dedicated for the community center and golf course operations, basically, which can include capital, so any of the expenses that are associated with it. And while I have the mic, I realize that I misspoke earlier about the elimination of the 27 and the no golf option. There was not officially a vote of the council on that regard. It was a discussion. It was an issue that was brought up, and I apologize for misspeaking about that.
One question, Mary. When this process was started, were all options looked at?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Kill, yes.
Were there any that were eliminated immediately? Any options that were eliminated at this point or in the beginning?
No, sir.
So at this point, the council has not voted to eliminate any options that are possible?
That is correct. It's not. It was not an official vote, so that was my bad. But there was conversation about it, about suggesting that the focus be on the 36-hole option and the 18-hole option.
Are there any other options that were discussed by either staff or the town council that have not been brought up here to our committee?
Did you have one in mind that we missed? The 45-hole, maybe? The 45-hole would be the only other option that that technically was sort of alluded to in the pro formas as a here's what the additional cost would be or here's what the additional subsidy would be, but we didn't focus on it specifically. Is this a gotcha? Did I miss something?
Well, one option that I have seen other places is they have sold all or part of the 36 holes to developers and had revenue coming in from property taxes and have the developer pay for the landscaping in a desert landscaping and have the HOA of the new homes pay for the maintenance of all the landscaping. And I was just wondering if that's ever been discussed.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Kill, when the consultant study that was done 2 years ago did evaluate options that included some potential areas for development. I have not been given any direction on the part of the elected body to look at that. And I do want to mention that that I'm not... Any sale of the property would be required to go through a public vote. And so there's been no conversation about it, and I've received no direction to look into that matter, no. And a lease is currently not allowed in the purchase and sales agreement with HSL.
So it's not legally able to be done?
A lease is currently not able to be done. The sale of the entire property is not something that we evaluated nor something that's come up in any discussion that I've had.
And how about parts of it?
The evaluation
a quarter
that was,
or a third or any portion of it to be able to generate revenue through a property tax or HOA fees.
Those options were included in the consultant study 2 years ago. And those consultant study options were incorporated in the range analysis that was put together for the pro forma. So technically they're in there. But there's been no policy direction on the part of the council to proceed in that way.
So it's in the council's hands right now, basically. If they want to do something, they have to initiate it.
If there is an interest in wanting to reevaluate that, then the staff stands ready to do that. But so far, they're in all the context of these conversations, I've not heard that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mary, did you say you had a slide that would show us all of the conditions that the council asked for?
Certainly.
Having to do with the 36 holes? I'm not certain that we all understand what they are.
You may not be able to read them since it's a little small, so let me go over what the motion was and what's now in the hands of staff that we're evaluating. So the motion was made by Mayor Winfield, seconded by Councilmember Rodman, to have the conditions, and I'll go over those here in a moment, presented in support of the 36-hole option be evaluated by staff and that staff include in the pro forma the sales tax revenue generated from golf, $175,000 for the additional revenue for the use of the member course for public play, and the report shall be completed and placed on a council agenda no later than October 2nd. And that was approved by council. So let me just very quickly go through the bullets. These are the conditions that are being evaluated by my team and I. operate as a municipal public course with a membership model that welcomes outside play, have tax subsidy of no more than $750,000 annually, membership rates raised 10% January 1, 2020 to reflect the membership revenue projection in the Troon 36-hole pro forma, make tee times available for all 36 holes, as indicated by Troon, to maximize outside play and increase revenue by $175,000 and include monthly measurable targets and penalties if not achieved. Needed capital improvements implemented on a pay-as-you-go basis, focusing first on the 18-hole Conquistador course from the Community Center Sales Tax Fund or the General Fund, with support for starting on the Conquistador side since the land is owned by the town. If the Community Center Sales Tax Funds can't cover the pay-as-you-go improvements, then discussion can begin about utilizing the General Fund. If General Fund monies are used, then golf repairs will need to compete with the other priorities of the community. Close the Overlook restaurant and that an alternative food service vendor operate a coffee sandwich shop at ground level consistent with municipal golf course food service operations. Reduce Troon's contract expenses by 5% beginning January 1, 2020. Address concerns with the proposed HOA financial offers. Concerns include terms of precedent to neighborhoods paying additional fees for amenities. Target this revenue toward the future of youth or other incentive programs. Discuss incentives or matching programs to improve the revenue stream and long-term viability of the courses. Establish measurable and time-sensitive targets for revenue, rounds played, and memberships to monitor the viability of operating and maintaining the 36 holes of golf. Become an enterprise that meets the $750,000 threshold or better. Have a viable plan in place to transition to an 18-hole golf course if the $750,000 tax subsidy threshold is exceeded for two consecutive years. Preserve open space in perpetuity by putting zoning in place that protects the interest of the town. And those are the bullets and what are now in the in our hands for evaluation.
And this will be discussed at the October...
second first, meeting.
The second. Okay.
October 2nd, correct.
October 2nd, right. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions having to do with golf?
I guess I have a question regarding these conditions. There's nothing here regarding how one would look at paying capital improvements for the improvements to the community center itself. Would bonding that to renovate the building still be in the spirit of what was proposed here?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Newell, I don't know. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
Any other questions, Dave?
Can we scroll up a bit?
Yes.
Another question. When we talk about a coffee sandwich shop, we're going to be serving, they're going to be able to serve alcohol there. Is that correct?
There is a liquor license on the property.
So there would be a liquor license for
yes,
that facility.
Yes, there is a liquor license on the entire property.
So if a vendor comes in to run this, they don't have to apply for a liquor license?
Mr. Chairman, I don't recall if the I believe the town owns the liquor license, and then we designate Troon as our management. I'll have to double check on that. I don't want to misspeak on that particular issue, but I'm almost certain that we actually own the license, and so then we can, give it, so to speak, to the operator of the facility so that they can serve the alcoholic beverages.
So the thought would be to have Troon continue to run a small food and beverage operation rather than bring in an outside third party?
We're currently evaluating the request to look at this.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, if I may just clarify one thing. The request is to take a look at the feasibility of each one of these conditions and to bring that back to council. So if I didn't make that clear in reviewing those items, that was the stated objective at the council meeting.
Okay. Thank you. If there aren't any other questions, we'll go back to the beginning of this. I appreciate everybody's patience. I do have a call to audience. I have two blue cards up here. If there are other blue cards, they can be provided over here. I'd like to keep the discussion fairly short because we're already 2 hours into our meeting. John Eisenberger.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. Many people object because El Conquistador Golf supposedly loses so much money. Unfortunately, those people have not reviewed or understood the current actual financials. In the last 2 years, golf revenues have increased $549,000. Now, you may have missed that because 2 years ago, it also included over $300,000 of tennis revenue. So, you know, you have to be careful how you break out all the numbers. Additionally, about $400,000 to $500,000 of non-golf expenses are still allocated to golf. It will actually cost Oro Valley residents considerably more to maintain any other non-golf uses converted from the golf, the El Conquistador 36 holes of golf, than the rapidly declining golf losses. Many people think that if golf were eliminated, the sales tax would be eliminated. Nope. All city communications show that this tax will not be eliminated or reduced, even if El Conquistador Golf make a profit. The tax revenue is about $53 per Oro Valley resident. Part of that is paid by tourists or other non-residents. The real cost to subsidize El Conquistador Golf is probably less than $15 per resident per year. Many people object because El Conquistador uses water to grow grass. They are not aware that reclaimed water is used, and Oro Valley owns all of their reclaimed water, and it must be used or disposed of. Oro Valley does not buy reclaimed water. Oro Valley owns all the reclaimed water produced from Oro Valley sewage from the sewage treatment plants that Oro Valley sends their sewage to. It must be used or disposed of. Stone Canyon and the views might have to cover the $470,000 per year loss incurred if El Conquistador closes and stops buying reclaimed water, which will force both Stone Canyon and the views to convert to portable water. They cannot afford to pay that additional cost. If El Conquistador golf courses are currently used, El Conquistador golf courses are currently used by hundreds of walkers, runners, bikes, children, dogs, student track athletes, and others during the evenings and early mornings. Non-golf utilization would likely decrease if these beautiful ecological golf courses were eliminated. Deserts do not produce oxygen as generously as golf courses. Deserts do not absorb pollutants. Deserts do not cool the atmosphere. By converting El Conquistador to a desert does substantially increase the fire risk, according to Golder Fire Department's fire chief. Dozens of charities are supported by El Conquistador golf tournaments, probably more than all other Oro Valley operations put together. Golders Fire Chief also expressed a concern about lower tax revenues due to dropping property values. Pima County's fire departments are preparing to issue new financing bonds, which will be paid by increasing property taxes.
I've got about three more pages, but we'll pass on that. But I would like to make a couple of comments. When they're talking about private side of golf or of the courses, they really mean the membership side of the course. That should help clarify that. So,
thank you. John Anderson, please. Is John Anderson here? Okay. Let's review and approve the... We got one more. Susan Piercy.
Hi, everybody. I just want to thank you all so much because I know how hard everyone has worked on this, and I've really seen a spirit of compromise coming forward, and that's what this city needs right now. I've lived here for 29 years, and I've volunteered for many things, and I just want to thank all of you because I know it's a difficult situation. If it's okay for saving time, because I wasn't really intending on speaking, I just want to read you something that I wrote, which is pertinent. Basically, what I want to talk about is the benefits of the 36 holes versus the 18 holes, if that's okay with everybody. I don't personally golf, but my father is a golfer. He retired in Florida. He's 84 years old, and he's still out golfing and enjoying the golf courses there. One reason why the 36-hole option makes more sense than the 18-hole option from a financial standpoint is my understanding is that if you're going to join a golf club, so to speak, golfers like diversity in their play. They don't want to go play the same course like every Saturday, okay? So it's a huge selling point. I have a background in marketing and was a salesperson of medical stuff for 30 years, so I know something about marketing. Anyway, it's a huge marketing plus to have 36 holes. Because you can go out on Tuesday with your buddies and play one of the courses, and you can say, hey, let's get together and do the other course on Saturday. So in that way, people that are making decisions to join a golf club or a golf facility, they're much more inclined to sign a contract and pay higher fees for a golf club, so to speak, or a membership type model that offers two 18-hole courses. Another benefit of the courses having two 18 holes is that it literally can support things that will bring tons of revenue into the city, into the town of Oro Valley. Things such as the project graduation thing that benefits our whole town by saving students' lives. I personally volunteered for that for 2 years while my son was at Ironwood. And the ability to have the two 18-hole courses enables charitable organizations to make way more money to support worthy projects that benefit the whole town. Also, if we want to sponsor tournaments, again, I'm not a golfer, but they need two 18-hole courses to have enough space. Golf isn't something where you can just shove everybody into the same square footage. You have to have a little space so that people aren't getting hit in the head and stuff like that. So I hope that that clears up some of the benefits of the 36 holes, and there are many other benefits too numerous to mention, so I'll just leave it at that. And thank you very much, you guys. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you. Jen Lefebvre. Did I destroy the last name?
You said it 100% right. Hello, hello. I'm always terrible at these microphones. Okay, so again, I'm going to discuss tourism. Tourism is a major, major part of the town of Oro Valley's economy. At a bare minimum, closing even one half of the golf course would result in $1 million loss to our town's general fund. I also wanted to make you guys aware, I'm not sure if any of you got it, but a flash vote survey went around a few days ago. Do you guys know what a flash vote survey is? And it asked what the number one thing to do for tourism is in Oro Valley. And the overwhelming response was golf. One person even left a comment that said, what else is there to do in Oro Valley besides play golf? the loss in tourism obviously will affect not only the town of Oral Valley, but all of our local businesses. I've gone around and spoken to many businesses that have golfers in the morning or golfers in the afternoon, golfers in the evening at their bars, a lot of golfers. Eliminating one or both of these courses will be completely detrimental to our town's economy. One of the things I love about our community is the high number of locally owned businesses. Going to Torino and having the servers know your name and remember what your order is, you can't get that at a chain restaurant. You just can't. And it is one of the things that makes people feel good about coming here, makes people feel good about spending their money here. If we take this away, I'm scared for what may happen to those businesses. Honestly, we moved here 2 years ago from Massachusetts, and there I was a small business owner. And I know, hands down, that every single person that walked in my door was important to me. And that is how our community feels. And to take away a huge section of their business, honestly, I don't know how they would survive. So please keep tourism and profit in mind as you go forth and make these decisions and recommendations. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Okay, our next agenda item is review and approval of the August 20 regular session meeting minutes. Has everyone had a chance to take a look at those minutes?
Move acceptance.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Financial update.
Mr. Chair, may I request that we take a 5-minute break, please?
Okay, we'll take a 5-minute break. Thank you. Shall we reconvene the meeting?
Can we please have order in the room? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. I missed the council liaison comments, but I've been told that he has no comments for us. So away we go. Finance.
Right. Commissioner Beasley, thank you. Item number three. Item number two, presentation and discussion of the town's fiscal year 18-19 financial update through June 30th. So we have some very good news. The year finished out very well for the general fund and some for some of our other major funds. What you see here, you can see that the revenues came in at $41.2 million for the general fund. The prior year, we were at $38 million. So in revenues increased on a year-over-year basis by about $3.2 million. Our budget for 18-19 was $38.9 million, so our revenues exceeded our budget by approximately $2.3 million. On the expenditure side, the budget for expenditures was $42 million. We came in at $39.6 million, so we were $2.4 million below our budget on the expenditure side. Getting into more details of some of the revenues, local sales tax exceeded budget by $1.6 million or 8.3%. License and permit revenues exceeded the budget by $220,000 or approximately 10.3%. State shared revenues, those are the income tax, the state sales tax, the vehicle license tax that the state collects and then they share with cities and towns. So those revenues exceeded our budget by about $170,000 or 1.5%. Charges for services came in $140,000 over budget. Interest income exceeded budget by $500,000. So again, total revenues estimated to exceed budget by $2.3 million for the year, or about 5.9%. Now it is important to note that these are unaudited numbers. The auditors were in just last week, and so they're completing their field work, but these are the unaudited numbers. When we look at the expenditure side, we had personnel savings of approximately $680,000. operations and maintenance savings of $990,000, capital outlay savings of $180,000. There was a transfer that was budgeted to the HERF fund for $550,000. And when we get to the HERF fund, we'll be able to show you that that transfer was not necessary. So we did not transfer that $550,000 from the general fund to the HERF fund because the HERF fund was actually doing well also. So total expenditures estimated to be under budget by $2.4 million. The revenues exceeded expenditures by $1.6 million, and we're projecting year-end fund balance at $18.2 million, or 46% of expenditures. Now, there is one item that did that has come up in the audit.
We have one question for you.
Just while you're on the revenues and expenditures, just I noticed that the sales taxes, which you just reported on, actually came in over $1 million from where it was forecasted back in the May results at that time. Now, I know you weren't doing the May results at that time, Mr. Arts, but that seemed to have been a lot more than what we had anticipated, and I was wondering what caused it. It's a good result. I was wondering what caused that.
Commissioner Letchford, I can address that. Actually, in the last month of the fiscal year, we did collect a sizable amount for our speculative builder construction sales tax. And so that was not anticipated for the fiscal year. That helped kind of boost up that year-end estimate. And I would say other areas in construction sales tax primarily is the reason for that better-than-expected performance that we were looking at.
What is a speculative builder sales tax?
So let me see if I can address this and get this right, Mr. Chair. So I believe when a property is sold within a certain time frame, I'd have to go back and double check on this, so I don't want to state this with certainty, but I think when there's a particular time frame when a property or development is sold, we do have what's called a speculative builder tax, where they are required to submit 4% construction sales tax on that sale, and so that's what we've collected in this instance.
Educating the member.
I believe it's an option underneath the Model City Tax Code, and we've elected to include that option.
Okay. We've been educated.
So one item to mention on the fund balance, the auditors did complete their field work last week, and they have identified that the town has not in the past accrued the sales tax revenue for the month of June that is collected in the month of July. So in the past, we've only recorded the 12 months. But at some point in the past, we should have gone in and accrued those July collections back to June. So there's a prior period adjustment that will impact the general fund by about $1.5 million, $1.5 million increase to our fund balance, because we are going to go and pick up the July collections in this fiscal year. So we're going to record those collections this year where we haven't done that in the past. So that's an additional $1.5 million that will be added to our general fund balance. And so this slide was prepared before that number was identified. So we actually would be projecting our year-end fund balance to be closer to $19.7 million.
Is this some change to an accounting standard?
Chairperson Beasley, it isn't a change. What the auditors identified is that the reports that we get from the Department of Revenue, they're the ones that collect our sales tax. In the past, it wasn't clearly identifying for them what month's collections they were. The Department of Revenue recently changed their reporting to make it clear that the collections, the money we were receiving in July, were actually June tax receipts. And so now that it's clear to them, they are recommending that we go out and pick up July's revenue, accrue that back into our fiscal year. So if we did that, there would be 13 months of revenue recorded in this year. We don't want 13 months, so we're going to do a prior period adjustment, adjust the beginning fund balance, and still only record 12 months of revenue in this year so that the operating statement is materially correct.
You know, Mr. Arsett, of course, you're new to this. I find it difficult that the audit firm wouldn't have picked that up in prior years. It seems a fundamental accounting test that you do, particularly as you test your accruals. I'm surprised that wasn't picked up before. I understand that you're saying the reporting from the state may have made that more difficult, but it makes me want to take a look at their testing procedures they're using, because that should have been pretty evident. It doesn't sound immaterial. So it's something you might want to take a look at when you're doing your outreach with them.
Vice Chair Lashford, we will do that. We will look into that.
Are we using the same auditors?
Commissioner Kill, I believe we've used the same audit firm for 8 years now.
And are they auditing other towns or villages or cities?
They do audit other communities. It is important to note that we did have a different set of auditors, a different managing auditor come in this year that was different than past years. So it is a different set of eyes, and auditors have looked at it differently this year. Okay, moving on to the... So moving on to the Highway User Revenue Fund, we also refer to it as HERF on occasion. You may hear me refer to it as that. So in the Highway Fund, revenues exceeded our prior year by approximately $300,000, and it was short of our budget in the current year by about $200,000. On the expenditure side, we came in about $500,000 below our budget on expenditures. Some of the highlights: the HERF tax revenues actually exceeded the budget by $270,000, or 8.3%. Total revenues were under budget by approximately $230,000. But the reason for that is that $550,000 transfer that we didn't do. We had budgeted for $550,000 coming in from the general fund. Since the performance of the fund was so positive, we didn't need to make that transfer, and so that's why the revenues are coming in under our budget.
So you're looking at a transfer as a revenue source?
On this account, it does show it as a revenue, yes. Instead of an other financing source or transfers in and transfers out.
Mr. Chairman, if I may also address that, one of the things that was changed in the current fiscal year budget, the previous highway fund was a commingling of general fund resources as well as the HERF funds. Based on a recommendation by the auditor, this year is the first year that the highway fund will be only HERF, and we ended up moving those they're street-related expenditures, but they're being paid for out of the general fund, and that is now a division or part of the public works budget. So we won't need to do these transfers in the future, and it just makes the auditing process a lot cleaner to ensure that the town is spending HERF dollars specifically for the things that we are entitled by law to spend them on. And so it makes our record keeping a whole lot easier. We were meeting the requirements, but we had to go through some machinations to make sure that the dollars were applied to the right uses and that sort of thing. And this just makes it so much cleaner. So you won't see those kinds of transfers in the future.
If you needed additional funds, would they come from the general fund in the term of the historical transfers?
There have been historical transfers. But there was a fund balance for a long period of time because some dollars were built up, and I think Ms. Gomez can probably speak to that in more detail.
Mr. Chair, yes, the fund balance in the highway fund had built up because we had previously had a resolution on the books where our construction sales tax was actually split between what was going into the general fund and what was going into the highway fund. I believe it was a two-thirds, one-third, with one-third going into the highway fund. And so over time, especially during the years when the town was really growing, you know, back in the early 2000s, I think that this resolution had been into effect, those funds were building up in the highway fund, and so they had previously been higher.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to the community center. Revenues in the community center fund came in at $6.7 million. That was very consistent with last year's number and slightly over our budget number for the year. The expenditure side came in at $6.2 million, which is about $400,000 less than the budget on the expenditure side. So again, total revenues estimated to end the year at over budget by $90,000. Total expenditures are estimated to be under budget by $325,000, or 4.9%, and total revenues in the fund exceeded expenditures by $502,000. Year-end fund balance is estimated at $312,000. Now, there is two prior period adjustments in this fund also, the first one being for that sales tax that I mentioned earlier. So a portion of the sales tax that was collected is that half-cent sales tax that's dedicated. So there needs to be an entry, and it was about $180,000 increase to the fund balance in the community center fund.
This is because of the July, June?
Correct.
Same situation.
Same situation as the general fund. Then there is a second prior period adjustment in the community center fund, and this one is a reduction to fund balance. So back in 2016, when the town took over the golf course operations, so in 15 we took it over, and then in 2016, HSL donated some supplies inventory to the town. So I'm not exactly sure what that was, but it was some inventory that was given to the town that then was given to Troon to sell. So at that time, the town went ahead and recorded that as a revenue and basically the asset of that inventory. But then those supplies were given to Troon, and then Troon ran it through their books. So the town recorded it, and then it got recorded again when it ran through Troon's numbers. So this amount of approximately $120,000 has been the books since 2016. Staff and the auditors have been aware of it. We've been trying to determine when the right time to correct it was. And so now that in this fiscal year we have a positive fund balance, the decision was made that we should go ahead and correct this as a prior period adjustment, because we were waiting until we had that positive fund balance to make this adjustment. We did want to make it previous years because it would have thrown the fund into a further negative fund balance. So it was an error back in 2016. We over-recorded revenue by approximately $120,000, and we are proposing through the audit to correct that this year with a prior period adjustment. So the net of those two prior period adjustments is an increase of about $60,000 to fund balance.
Why did the auditors allow you to hang on to that for as long as you did?
Chairman Beasley, I really don't know the answer to that, other than we were looking for an appropriate time when the fund balance was available to make that entry. I'm not sure why it wasn't recommended previously, other than the fund balance amount.
I don't think I've ever heard of a general accepted accounting principle of waiting for the right time to record something.
I agree with you, Chuck, and I'm kind of thinking that this isn't a prior period adjustment. I've got to go back and think about this, but it's more or less a write-off of an asset. I mean, I know you've got revenue. Have you discussed this with the auditors?
Vice Chair Letchford, yes, we have discussed it with the auditors. It was an overstatement of revenue back in 2016, and so that's why it's being proposed as a prior period adjustment, to reduce the fund balance for that overstatement of revenue in 2016.
Okay, well, it's just not particularly material, but it's not something I'd probably have an argument the other side, but we're not going to get into that here.
Okay.
So with that, that's the end of my presentation for the year end. Item number...
When will the audit be completed? When will final financials be available?
They're typically available sometime in the December to January timeframe, when we would have the published copy of the comprehensive annual financial report.
You had two comments on there on the last line of both the revenue and expense. All the lines above it said expense is going to be this, revenue is going to be this, but the bottom lines, I think both of them said it is estimated that this is going to be this. Is there a reason why the bottom line said is estimated, where all the rest you were, sounded like you were pretty sure what they were going to be? The first two you showed, first one was revenue, the second one was expense. See, all the rest said interest income exceeded, charges for services exceeded, but the bottom one says total revenue estimated to exceed. Is there a reason the last line of each slide says estimated?
Commissioner Keel, I don't believe that there was intended to be a difference between saying interest income exceeded and total revenues estimated to exceed.
Okay, all right, thank you.
I believe it was just a wording.
I thought maybe there was some other something coming down the road for those.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, it was just, I'm sorry if I may, Chairman Kelly. Yeah, it was just emphasizing that they're unaudited overall, the numbers. There was nothing meant by that, basically.
So I have a question with regards to last year's budget. One of the things we did this year was move the tennis and swim at the community center, and we've always listed it in the financial report that this was a payment as made to rent. But it's never. I don't think I've ever heard for the record where that payment of rent to the town and what fund that is going into. Is that going into the general fund or is that going back into the community center?
Chairman Newell, those rental payments are going into the community center fund.
Okay, so that is the year-end update. Item number 3 on the agenda is presentation and discussion of the town's fiscal year 1920 financial update for July 2019. So for the first month of the year, revenues came in at $3.2 million. The prior year, there was at $2.9 million, so approximately a $300,000 increase over prior year. Revenues are about 8.1% of the budget, of the total budget, so that's coming in right on track on a straight line basis. When you look at the expenditures for the first month are $2.9 million, slightly over what we expended last year, and they're coming in at 7% of our total expenditure budget. Some of the highlights, all revenues are estimated to be on budget at this time, you know, again, through the 1 month of information that we have. Local sales tax collections came in at $1.6 million, or 8% of the budget. Again, on a straight line basis, that's right in line with what we would expect. License and permit revenue totaled $343,000. That's coming in at 17.3% of the budget. State shared revenues at $947,000, or 7.6% of the budget. Charges for services at $259,000, or 10% of the budget. And then expenditures are estimated to end the year under budget by approximately $114,000. And year-end fund balance at this point, which is a very early estimate, is estimated at $15.7 million. Because in the budget, we did program to spend down our fund balance. We were spending more money than we were bringing in. So that's why that July or the June slide showed the $18 million. But here for this fiscal year, we're projecting that the ending fund balance will be 15.7.
Do you know if the licenses and fees are going up or down as a percentage of total revenue over the last few years?
Chair Kill, we are seeing, I would say, a year over year, maybe a very slight softening, but we do budget very conservatively for these revenues. That's the reason why just through 1 month of the fiscal year, they're already looking very good compared to budget.
What was last year lower than the year before?
I would have to take a look at that. I can get that information to you.
I'm just curious if there's a downward trend that there's less growth going on. Mm-hmm.
I could take a look at that and get back to you on that.
On the highway fund, revenues totaled $495,000 for the first month, and the expenditures were at $81,000 through the first month. The HERF gas tax revenue is expected to come in over budget by about $200,000 this year, and that was due to a one-time allocation from the state. So they had swept some funds in the past, and so they were basically returning some of those funds, and it was a one-time allocation this year. Total revenues are estimated to end the year over budget by $227,000. Through 1 month, we're estimating expenditures to be right at budget and projecting year-end fund balance to be $584,000 in the HERF fund. In the community center fund, revenues came in for the first month at $523,000, about $80,000 more than the prior year. And expenditures were $624,000 for the first month. So that revenue total is $523,000 is 7.8% of the budget, and we're estimating by year end that would be over by $24,000. Expenditures totaled the $624,000 or 9.7% of the budget, and we're estimating that they will come in under budget by $14,000 by year end. So total revenues in the funds projected to exceed total expenditures by $335,000 and are expecting to see an increase in the fund balance to $647,000. So with that, I'm available for any questions you may have on the July.
This isn't strictly about the town financials and the reporting, but when do you expect to get some preliminary information on pension investment returns?
Commissioner Beasley, we typically get the new actuarial report for PSPRS sometime from usually September to October. I don't believe they've come in yet. So once we get that information in, then our financial statements will be updated with those new actuarial numbers. And then within that report, it does include dividends and yield for the pension system.
Okay. And this is for all of the pension plans roughly the same time?
Correct.
Okay. Anybody have any questions?
I have a question. Going to attachment C1 on the Community Center Fund page, we have a listing date of the transfers out, and I believe part of that would be the payments back, the loan payments back to the general fund. I was wondering if we had the anticipated date that we were going to be making that payment from the community center fund back to the general fund, and also what the dates of the previous payments were and how many more we think we have.
Chair Newell, we always prepare that transfer in June, so we do that transfer the last month of the fiscal year. Fiscal year 18-19 was the third payment of 10 that we'll be doing. So the previous three fiscal years, fiscal year 18-19, 17-18, and 16-17 were when we did those transfers, but we do always book that transfer the last month of the fiscal year.
So we have made three payments, and they've been made in the June of each of the, in the last month of each year.
Okay. Correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Yeah, future agenda items. Fire away.
So, I was wondering if we might be able to put onto the agenda next month how we're moving forward with the audit. You mentioned that. I don't believe this commission hasn't been through an audit for the town. So I'm interested in knowing how it's progressing, what the time schedule is, and what the expectation of the commission is. And I think it would also be helpful for the commission to be able to meet the auditor as well, the partner in charge, just so that we have that relationship and so we have an idea of what to expect. I'd hate to... I remember reading last year's audit, and it was about 185 pages, and of course that was after the fact, but if we have to do that in a matter of a weekend, I want to know which weekend I have to give up. So. If we could put that on next month's agenda.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I would also like to see something on the pension funds. Hopefully, we'll have some preliminary information on investment returns. Because everything I'm seeing in the major publications are showing that pension funds for this fiscal year have not been meeting their targets. And that's obviously an issue for us. So.
Okay, we can bring that back also.
Yes. I'm sure there'll be some other issues having to do with golf.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, that'll be a permanent item, I think. Okay. Anything else? Do I have a motion?
I'll second that.
All in favor? All right. Thank you very much.